This episode is sponsored by Accord. Accord helps revenue teams drive execution excellence by enforcing their standards for how they sell, onboard, and expand with prospects and customers. Revenue teams can ensure flawless execution of value selling, med pick, account planning, business cases, mutual action plans, and more with Accord's deal execution platform. If you've been a longtime listener of the show, you've probably already heard me talk about how I use mutual action plans, account plans, and business cases to manage and close my enterprise deals. Well, Accord has created a better way to manage the process. They're your solution for deal execution. Your buyers are going to love it because it makes their evaluation process so much easier by helping them seamlessly validate and onboard new and existing vendor partners. I've been super excited to be using Accord to manage my six and seven figure enterprise deals. So for sales players looking to get started with Accord for free, use the link in the show notes to sign up today.
Hey, sales players, before we dive back into the conversation, I wanted to introduce you to a game changer in the lead generation tool arena, and it's called LeadFeeder. Imagine having the power to identify companies visiting your website, tracking their behavior in real time, seamlessly integrating this data in your CRM. LeadFeeder is not just a tool, it's your secret weapon for efficient and targeted lead engagement. What sets LeadFeeder apart is its ability to provide detailed insights into visitor behavior, helping your sales team to prioritize efforts and close deals faster. Ready to revolutionize your approach to leads and deals? Head over to leadfeeder.com for your free demo today. That's LeadFeeder.com. Don't miss out on the future of successful lead generation with LeadFeeder. Plus, if you go to the show notes, we actually have a special link that will give you a 21-day free trial instead of the normal 14-day free trial. Go over today and sign up.
Welcome to Sales Players, the number one podcast for top players in B2B sales.
Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out in the world of sales, this is the show for you.
We're all about bringing you fresh, actionable ideas to supercharge your rev gen game.
We dive deep into the mindset, habits, and tools used by top performers in the industry, generate more leads, close more deals, and build wealth and financial security in B2B sales.
So if you're ready to level up, you've come to the right place. Join the conversation with other like-minded sales players and continue the discussion beyond the show.
Hit the subscribe button, tune into the Sales Players, and let's start winning together.
Today, we'll be speaking with Derek Osgood. Derek is the founder and CEO of Ignition. He shares today the goal behind building Ignition, which is ultimately to help better connect product, marketing, and sales, how product can map to the revenue side of the business, and how you as a seller can think more about products and features. This was a great conversation. Derek is an amazing entrepreneur, but also has a really great career that he shares more in detail during the episode. We really enjoyed the conversation and learned a bunch from it. So without further ado, here's Derek. So Derek, you were telling us off the air that this is your third podcast for the day.
I am fully warmed up.
All right. We were joking that you're fully warmed up now. You're in your flow state. Well, welcome to Sales Players. We're super stoked to have you on. Maybe a good starting point would just be to tell us a bit about your background and what brought you to the place you are today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I'm pumped to jam on this stuff. Happy to give some quick background on myself. So, I basically actually am coming more at these things from, the product and marketing side of the house. I historically have run product and marketing teams kind of throughout Silicon Valley. So, early on in my career, I was actually at PlayStation as marketing as a brand manager, launching big AAA games. So, worked on some fun stuff like God of War and Gran Turismo and a couple other things. And since then, I've basically been around venture-backed startups ever since. And I've done a lot of early stage stuff. So I've been in the weeds where I was like even a seller myself and, jumping on deals, closing deals prior to us having salespeople in-house. So did a lot of early stage stuff, running marketing and growth teams, range of different verticals from like consumer stuff to B2B stuff. Then ended up joining BBVA, which is a big Spanish bank, led marketing across, the fintech arm, which was a bunch of companies we'd either created and incubated in-house or invested in or acquired. And then ended up joining Rippling, help them scale up from seed through Series B or so, running product marketing. And so, you know, doing a lot of work kind of enabling our sales team, building out a lot of our early kind of marketing ops and sequencing around outbounding, and then ended up, you know, most recently leaving there to go start my own thing. And so, you know, I've been full bore in the seller seat as a founder, doing founder led sales, growing Ignition, and we're basically a platform that helps align product marketing and sales teams around, you know, new product launches, new feature launches, so that you can surface more upsell opportunities for the teams, and, you know, enable the downstream revenue teams to, you know, go and close deals around those. So, yeah, done a bunch of stuff, and, you know, can talk about this stuff from the angle of both the person sitting in the seller seat and as well as the person who's responsible for getting them all the stuff that they need to be able to sell.
Well, so Derek, I'll ask a first question, and when I was doing some research on you, this really popped out to me as a seller. It says 80% plus of features are never adopted. And this is from Pendo. So I would love to hear, you know, I a friend of mine, David Bonney, he always talks about don't be a feature preacher in a demo, but would love to learn about how your company is helping to bridge that gap, so users are actually using the features, and how you're actually solving that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so like I 100% agree. And like, I think it's been one of the things that's been reinforced to me more now that I'm like the person kind of sitting in the seller's seat, that, you know, the feature, I haven't heard the term feature preacher, but I like that. You know, if you are just like dumping features at people, like they're never going to consume it. And, you know, part of it is just customers are not great at digesting all of that stuff. They don't know your product well enough to be able to even like wrap their head around how features are going to fit into their overall problem. So I think, you know, what we do is we really actually try and more tightly tie customer specified needs like to those features. So what we'll do, for example, is we'll plug into your CRM, and obviously you have kind of all your call transcripts, your emails, et cetera, pulling into that CRM if you got it integrated properly. And from there, we're actually reading all those deal notes, the transcripts, et cetera, and we're extracting all the things that customers mention as feature gaps or needs or competitive comparisons, and we're pulling those onto a roadmap for the product team. The product team can then, you know, prioritize those things based on the actual revenue impact from your CRM that, you know, is getting blocked by those features not being live. And then the cool thing is we actually come back to, you know, the rep who's responsible for selling to that deal when that feature ships, and we notify them with an upsell notification that says, hey, you know, sales rep A, these like two deals that you are working right now just got unblocked because this feature shipped. So I think the reason that like most, you know, features don't, like a lot of sales teams don't love talking about upcoming features in calls, aside from the getting people excited, is that, you know, it's not totally clear like how those features map to what that customer is expressing as a need. And so they haven't really like internalized how that feature fits within that overall customer problem. And so what we're doing is we're actually just tying that one to one so that you can just really easily go and accelerate that deal that's already in flight, that customer explicitly mentioned that they needed that feature. And you as a sales rep may not have been like paying attention to what's going on the product roadmap. You may have missed it. Somebody didn't tell you that the thing shipped. So we just make it really easy to go close that loop. And that when you are able to tie a feature directly to a customer's explicitly expressed need or pain, then it becomes really valuable because you're actually going back to them and using their words back to them saying, hey, look, like you asked for this thing. We just built that thing. Now's a good time for you to engage or close, you know, let's move this forward.
Interesting.
That's super cool. How, where'd you come up with the idea? I'd love to hear the origin story there. Yeah. How did you launch things?
Yeah, I mean, like I've just been responsible for building this process at so many different companies, you know, both from the product side, the marketing side, and, you know, I've seen it at like big companies, small companies, medium companies, across a range of different industries. In general, companies are just really bad at commercializing new products and new features that they've built. And part of that is that, you know, ultimately, the product team oftentimes doesn't tell the marketing and sales teams that the thing even shipped in the first place. So they don't even know to go talk about it. if they do tell them, oftentimes it's just like, hey, we shipped this feature, here's what it does. There's no actual marriage between that and the personas and customer needs that that thing is designed to solve for. And so the sales team doesn't feel confident selling it because they just got told this thing shipped, but like, who's it for? Who cares about it? Like, am I going to talk about this to some customer and they're going to not even, they're going to just roll their eyes because it's not relevant to them. And so, yeah, it's funny because I actually just finished reading the Challenger sale, and it was talking about how, you know, a lot of the best reps in the data set that they were looking at, like, were the reps that ended up not actually selling new product launches until, you know, a couple of months after that new product launch had shipped. And basically the reasoning for it was because, like, by that point, all of the enablement work around that product launch had kind of been done, and they'd identified, like, okay, who is the real persona this is for? What is the messaging to use when describing it? What assets do we have to support kind of communicating it to customers in terms of case studies? And that's basically because most companies forget that, like, product launch, feature launch, like, those are at the end of the day an enablement exercise. The only important thing around it is to get the information into your seller's hands around what is that thing, who is it for, why is it important, why is it valuable to those customers, so then your sellers can go and articulate it to people. And most companies, they just, especially within tech, they just kind of ship that new thing, hope that somebody's going to figure out how to talk about it, and it ends up in a demo somewhere, and the sales team's like, I don't know what this is, and then they have to scramble to solve for it.
Something that's really surprising to me is you're sharing some very interesting insights. This is something that gets very, it's overlooked. It really gets overlooked in a lot of sales training and enablement. And I think we forget, you know, we a lot of us in sales, we focus so much on, like, the methodology or the tactical or even the strategic things you can be doing. And there's so much training on how to personalize an email or how to, you know, make the right cold call and things like that. But we do actually, I think, overlook in this business a lot the how do we map product features and functions back to pain points, back to, you know, solutions, right, for the customer. And then how do we also use new features as a compelling event to reignite the conversation? So I think that's actually really cool. And it's something that I've done just ad hoc in my career. I'll send an old prospect, like someone that I talked to 6 months ago, a note saying, hey, we just put out this new capability on the platform. Maybe it's a good time to reconnect. So it sounds like this is a way to operationalize that type of interaction with a prospect.
Very much so. And it's even you know, like when you think about not just prospects too, it's like, you know, the lowest hanging fruit sales opportunities for you are cross-sell or upsell of an existing customer. And so, you know, you have some prospect that you closed 6 months ago, and if they were talking about, you know, a product or a feature that has been in your pipeline for a while, but you closed them, you know, 6 months ago, you probably forgot about them. And the reality is, like, when that thing ships, it's a really easy layup opportunity for you to go back to that prospect that you already have a relationship with, you've already closed, you've already delivered some value to as a company, and say, hey, look, like, we just shipped this other thing that is pretty relevant to you. Like, should we have a bigger conversation about, you know, expanding this account? And that's something that, like, you know, so many teams overlook. And it's like when we talk about rippling, like, it was a huge part of our growth was our ability to effectively cross-sell and upsell existing customers to all of these other products that we had built.
And Derek, how talk to me about, you've worked with a lot of startups. How does the early stage founders and those teams decide on which features to go after and really what to start to build and what to spend time on and what's actually going to add dollars to the bank, or is it just going to be a waste of time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the cynical answer there is that, like most, you know, early stage companies, they kind of just build what the founders want to build. And there's not, and oftentimes, you know, there's a lot less science behind that than, you know, we would like to hope. And I think, you know, this is where, like, the very best companies are the ones where, you know, product is commercially minded and they are actually thinking about, like, okay, what deals are hung up in our pipeline? What are customers asking for on, you know, all of our sales calls? Like, they're doing real win-loss analysis on that stuff. And the big challenge why companies don't do that is usually just poor visibility. It's like the sales team is so busy selling that they don't, you know, really have time to go back to product and push product for new features and like stay on top of it in a way that's going to meaningfully drive them to actually build it. And product like doesn't have visibility into the conversations that sales is having. So they're not able to actually understand what is hanging up deals on these calls unless they're really like good at building the relationship with the sales team and they have regular syncs to like catch up on what's blocking deals. But most teams don't do that because they're all busy and they have other priorities that they're working on. So, you know, I think the very best companies, they are prioritizing based on actual revenue impact, which is tied to actual prospects in your pipeline, and they're forecasting around that. And the only way that you can do that is when you do actually have some degree of like integrated systems where you can pass CRM data and call transcription data and win loss into the work that the product team is doing on the prioritization front.
Very interesting. And would you, from a tactical level, if you had a CRM, what would you, like in a demo call, would you have like missing features, or would you add something into the actual CRM itself to start capturing this data?
You can. So, you know, like specifically in our tool, you know, like we allow you to set up a field where you can say, okay, this is the feature gap field and we're going to pull that in. That's kind of the clunkier way that like requires reps to input data. The reality though is like what we actually do is we look at the data that's already in your CRM that's integrating or that's syncing continuously. So like if you've got your email set up to sync with your CRM, and if you've got your call transcripts set up to sync with your CRM, we just read that. And then we have some AI that parses it in the background. So you don't actually need to do anything at the like rep level in order to be able to track these feature gaps. That's just pulling out automatically.
Cool. All right. Well, so go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, good. So I was just taking a look at the site here. Looks like you guys do like a state of go-to-market report. And I'm curious, this is kind of ad hoc here. I don't know when the last time you read through the report was or what the latest report was, but I'm just kind of curious to share with our listeners who are all, you know, typically go-to-market individual contributors, any insights that your team has found right now, you know, currently in the space. And I think you can also share anything that you're finding as you guys are out growing your company and reaching out to companies to install Ignition. What are some things that you're finding in the marketplace right now that sellers need to be thinking about?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because we use the term go-to-market probably a little differently in the sense that like we, you know, think about it through the lens of like the launch process and, you know, introducing new things to market. Go-to-market obviously has like multiple connotations that it's sure. used in. So, you know, obviously it's used in many cases to just describe like the sales process. So that report actually is much more focused on the launch process. It's been a minute since I've looked at it. We ran that, you know, kind of in the latter part of last year, but I do know that, you know, like one of the biggest insights that got pulled out of that was that, you know, if you looked at companies' growth trajectories and, you know, the companies that were surveyed, the highest growth companies were also the ones that like most highly indexed on how heavily they invested in their launch process. And like, ultimately that's like a proxy for how heavily they're investing in their their sales enablement processes. Like, you know, cause like I said, you know, launch ultimately is an enablement process. And so it was funny because like, there's a lot of companies, you know, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show is like a lot of companies just don't think about launching stuff, right? Like they don't want to go make a big splashy launch. They don't want to go through all the effort that's required to like train the sales team every single time something meaningful like ships. And they don't want to build all the collateral to support that and give it and be able to make it easy for reps to hand off to customers. And those are the companies that grow slower. Like it's just outright, like there is tons of empirical data that shows that the companies that invest in this stuff are the ones that grow faster. And like, you know, part of that is like you guys were saying, there's methodologies that are applicable in any given company that you're in, whether you're a product company or a service company or, you know, whatever subsegment of that you can think of. But those methodologies get you a big part of the way. At the end of the day, you still have to be able to articulate how your product maps to the pain points that customers are talking about, because that's how you get them to believe that you can deliver the value that you're promising. Yeah. And so, you know, ultimately you got to be good at communicating from doing that translation from the product team to the sales team and getting that handoff really tight.
I just keep always thinking it's like I call myself a recovering entrepreneur turned SaaS sales executive, and I really feel like SaaS is a lot like a restaurant, that there's the front of the house, the back of the house, and the kitchen staff and everything. It's very similar to, you know, if something doesn't get executed, somebody's not going to know that they need to sell, that this is out, it doesn't work. It's just so interesting to me.
It's funny, like Brian Chesky used that exact analogy when he was talking about like marrying product and product marketing as one role. It's like, you know, you have the back of the house that's building the product, and he was using the kitchen analogy, and it was like, we got the cook staff that's building the product, and then we've got the wait staff that's telling customers about the product. And if those two things aren't just really tightly aligned, then something breaks and the customer doesn't get their meal and they end up really pissed off, or they just end up not coming back. And so it's so critical to have these teams, you know, aligned. You know, it's really easy for sellers, you know, because they are so focused on that end customer, to forget that like they also need to talk to their product teams, and like the product team ought to forget that they also need to talk to their sales teams. And you know, those two teams need to be really tightly joined.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit here. You've done some really impressive things in your career. You know, worked at some unicorn startups. It looks like you're an investor and an advisor on a lot of different, you know, companies. You've also have a really nice mix of big companies. You've got, you know, PlayStation, but also you're a founder of a much smaller company now. Tell us a little bit about how you've navigated your career, how you've networked your way into some of these opportunities. I know a lot of our listeners out there are always thinking about how to manage their career in a way where they get that kind of wide cast experience that you've got, where they get enough time at a big company where they can see things at scale, but also, you know, you want to be part of a small company sometimes too, where you're relied upon and your results really count in a business like that. Not that they don't count at a bigger company, but sometimes it's harder to feel the impact in a larger organization. Maybe give us some advice that you'd have on just managing a career in tech back and forth between some big companies, some small companies, founding a company. What things have you learned?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important for people to remember that like careers aren't a straight line. And I think if you actually try and optimize your career as like this linear progression, you actually do yourself a disservice. And you know, the big leaps that you make in your career are oftentimes when you know, like on paper, take a bit of a step back. And so a good example of that is when I, you know, I started my career actually in sales. I was at Philip Morris for a while, selling my soul. And then I ended up, you know, being like, look, I wanted to be in marketing. And like, I really wanted to do brand management. I really wanted to be in a high scoped role where I had a ton of responsibility that like would expose me to a really broad range of things so I could learn a lot really quickly. And so like when I joined PlayStation, I actually like went from, you know, a pretty well-paying kind of sales job, and I opted to backdoor my way in by taking an internship there when I was like already in my career for, you know, I was like, look, I'm going to work there for a summer and I'm going to network my way into the role that I want. And I basically did that and, you know, worked in the internship for a couple of months and then ended up landing my dream job at the time by just making connections inside the organization to the roles that I wanted. And I think, you know, like when you look at like the jumps from big company to small company, or from small company to, you know, like different stage small company, oftentimes those things can feel like steps back. But the main thing you got to be thinking about anytime you make a step is, what are you optimizing for? And like in all of those cases, I was always optimizing for either an increase in learning rate or an increase in responsibility and skill and like ability to demonstrate skills. And so, you know, like almost all of those early steps in my 20s, I was optimizing around like how much can I, like what are the things that I don't know that I need to do in order to learn? And so I really broadly built out a skill set that like I wouldn't recommend going as like generalist as I did for most people, because I wanted to be a founder. Like that was my end goal. And so I was like, I need to do all this stuff in order to really understand kind of how all these pieces fit together. But you pick the areas that you want to get good at, and you go take whatever role is going to get you the best at them the fastest by forcing you to do them. And on top of that, like try and find really good mentors along the way. So like I was really lucky to be able to, you know, in most of my early stops, I found places where I could work very directly with really good CMOs that I really respected, and I would be, you know, reporting directly to them and spend a lot of time with them. And I was able to, you know, learn a lot through osmosis, have them as resources for me to, you know, lean on in the future for networking opportunities and whatnot. And so find good mentors, you know, don't be afraid of like steps back as long as you're still learning, and, you know, find, you know, optimize, like understand what you're optimizing for along the way.
What were some ways that you got close with mentors or were able to attract mentors to work with you? And that's so much harder today for, we talked to a lot of young folks that are early in their career and they maybe haven't had a lot of in-office experience. I feel really fortunate because when I started my career 10, 12 years ago, I had plenty of in-office experiences. I got to sit next to CEOs and founders and sales leaders throughout my career and was able to develop a lot of mentorship that way. A lot of the folks that tune into the show now are fully remote. And, you know, the sometimes the extent of their interaction with the broader team is Slack and once or twice a year when they go on site for a company all hands. How would you advise folks today to attract a mentor in this industry or in their line of work and their company or even outside of their company?
You know, it's so funny. I think, I don't know why my camera just shut off here, but
all good.
I think the number one thing is just ask. You know, honestly, like when I talk about, here, I'm going to change cameras. Sorry, my main camera looks like it died, so I'll move over.
You're good.
The number one thing is honestly just ask. I think so many people forget that like there are people who are potential mentors are not getting hit up like day in, day out for requests here. You know, like they do get them, but oftentimes those requests are pretty indirect. Like, you know, I get hit up a lot for like informational interviews from people and, you know, they're trying to kind of like half-heartedly tell around what their real ask is. And so I don't respond because it's not clear what they want. It seems like it might be a waste of my time, but I've had a couple of people who have pinged me and they're like, hey, I'm looking for a mentor. I'm trying to understand this, this, and this. Here's why. Here's what I can add as value to you in return for this. And like, so it's just classic like sales outbounding to people that are prospective mentors and, you know, like deliver value back to them, have a clear ask and make sure that they know what's in it for them. And most people are really happy to help, you know, like most people who are relatively senior in whatever discipline they're in, like they like passing that forward and they like mentoring younger folks who are earlier in their career. It's just that you've got to be clear about what you're asking them for so they don't feel like it's just going to be a road to nowhere and a waste of time.
Yeah, I'll add to that too. So when, you know, earlier on in my career, whenever I was looking for mentorship, and sometimes it wasn't always like super intentional, it was just bringing a curiosity to your day to day as much as you can. And, you know, early in my career, my curiosity was always around, what does it take to build a great team? How does equity in a startup work? Those are always like questions I had just from the onset. I always wanted to know that stuff. And so I would just sort of put it out there. And for example, you know, a number of years ago, I was working for a startup in Austin and we were in office. We had, you know, founder and CEO both in office with us. And, you know, you get to a point where it's just Friday afternoon and everyone's wrapping up the week and it's easy to just pop over and say, and again, I know it's harder in a remote first world that we're in now, but you can still reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm really curious. I know, you know, you used to work at XYZ company. You guys had a big exit. How did the stock options work there? You know, and how does that compare to what we do here? Right. And tell me about that. Like, I just want to know, how did you guys build morale on the team? Those kind of things. And when you start getting curious and asking those kind of questions, you definitely attract a mentor as well. And I think your point about also adding some value, you know, is there something that you can do to, you know, help that person up front, you know, give and then get. So I think that's really powerful too. And I don't think you have to be in the same office. You don't even have to be in the same state or country as this person now. Lots of things can get done over Zoom. Lots of things can get done via cell phone and you can still really build a long-term relationship as a, you know, mentor mentee with somebody that way.
You don't even need to work for the same company. Like that's the person may never need to have interacted with you. Like cold emailing people is magical. You can go out to somebody who is in no way, shape or form related to you. And if you're ask is compelling, they're gonna answer. And I think it's also, I mean, to your point about curiosity too, is like, when I'm talking about delivering value, one way that you're delivering value is also kind of stroking that person's ego. You're mm-hmm. delivering value by being curious about their background and like trying to understand them. Like that makes them feel good. And that's part of why people like sharing information. So definitely, I think all it comes down to is like, don't be afraid to ask and, you know, be curious. And, you know, I think don't feel like you're stealing that person's time, you know, yeah. like think about it through the lens of like, you're actually trying to better yourself and, you know, they may be incentivized to help you as well.
Derek, I have a question about burnout and it, you know, you've switched roles a lot and you talk to a lot of founders and I would just love to learn more about how you deal with burnout and maybe how you mentor people on dealing with burnout. And what do you suggest if like you're in a role, you're just grinding it out and you just want to take the leap to do something else, or it's just not working. The features aren't driving the new sales. You know, just would love to learn what you would have to say about that.
I'd love to know somebody else's solution because it's constant. You know, I think it's tough. Burnout's a real thing. And yeah. I came out of product marketing as a discipline, and like product marketing, you know, I think is like one of the most prone to burnout roles within companies. And so I definitely felt it. As a founder, you know, like founders are obviously like probably the most prone to burnout role out there. And, I've definitely felt it at times while building Ignition. The biggest thing that I try and do to, you know, kind of avoid it and, you know, help kind of solve it when it does pop up is be really conscious about diagnosing it, you know, as it's starting to emerge. Like, you know, don't let it kind of build and fester and get worse. You know, like you need to, as soon as you start noticing the early signs of burnout, like start addressing it right away. And, you know, the best ways to do that is like carve out time for yourself, reinvest in things that like really bring you joy and like that are not work related whatsoever. And I think oftentimes burnout is a symptom, especially within, you know, like you were talking about, you know, the features aren't selling, you know, you're like work, you're banging your head against the wall and not making impact. A lot of times like burnout, the fundamental cause for it is a feeling of like lack of agency and lack of kind of control over your own outcomes. And so, you know, one of the best ways you can solve for that is like find something to do that you have very high agency over. And like that can be as simple as like, oh, if you like sports, like go play a sport. And like, mm-hmm. you know, you feel direct one-to-one correlation between your effort and your like skill level and your outcomes. And that can solve for a lot of the feelings of burnout that you have, you know, day in, day out. So I think it's just about like finding, you know, being conscious about it and like finding time for yourself to go do the things that like don't burn you out and help yeah, re-energize right. you.
Well, and what, besides being a founder, what are some things that bring you joy? I see a tennis ball in the background. What kind of workouts do you do?
That's funny. The tennis ball, I don't actually play tennis. I bought tennis balls aspirationally and they're just sitting in the closet, but haven't really made it out. I was going to pick it up. I do enjoy playing a bunch of sports. So, you know, like I enjoy, you know, playing basketball, play football. You know, outside of that, like big travel buff. And, I'm also a bit of a fantasy nerd too. So I love my fantasy novels too. And so some combo of those three.
Very cool. Well, how can, you know, there's probably some folks out there listening that want to learn more about Ignition and also want to follow you and connect with you online. What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so best way to get in touch with me is probably through LinkedIn. If you just look up Derek Osgood on LinkedIn, I think my handle is Derek Osgood 3. And then best way to get in touch with Ignition is go to our website. It's haveignition.com and, you know, reach out there and we'd love to chat.
Awesome. Any final thoughts you care to share with the sales players out there, especially the ones that are out there on the front lines every day in the, you know, the current economy, picking up the phone, sending the next email, trying to map features to pain points. Any final words of wisdom?
Just keep going. It's, you know, it's tough market out there, but, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's like still a numbers game and, you know, just keep grinding and, you know, things will turn around if they're rough right now, but, you know, all you can do is coming, showing up every day and being consistent, and success will follow.
Awesome. Derek, thank you for coming on.
It's great having you on.
Yeah, likewise, guys. This is a blast. Thanks a bunch for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you do any prospecting with LinkedIn, you have got to go get set up with Surf. That's Surfe. It's a tool you can use to add new contacts to your CRM system directly from LinkedIn in seconds. I'm using it every single day. I add contacts, follow my deals, keep track of notes, and it ends up saving me a bunch of time on prospecting and outreach, which means I can spend more time moving my deals along. The data is always 100% accurate since I don't have to copy and paste all the fields over from each and every contact that I want to put in my CRM. Instead, Surf does that all automatically with just one click in about 60 seconds. The team over at Surf has put together a very special offer for fans of Sales Players. There's a link down in the show notes, and you can use the promo code JWSURF5. Don't forget the E at the end of Surf. That's JWSURF5 for 5% off your first year. Don't spend another minute doing things manually. Go get set up with Surf.